everyone, and welcome to another episode of Right Up Your Algae. Today, we're talking about the North Atlantic right whale. The right whale is a large baleen whale closely related to the bowhead, both having that sort of bow-shaped mouth that the bowhead is named after. They feed mainly on copepods, which they strain through their baleen like a sieve. And this is sort of a method of eating, I guess, that a lot of marine animals will use, even if they're not necessarily related. So you have things like scallops that will, you know, take in a load of sediment or just a big, I guess, volume of water, and then they will feed on the tiny little microorganisms that are inside.
Slurping.
Sure, we'll call it slurping. They take in large volumes of water instead of
slurping.
They slurp in large volumes of sediment through structures like gills and baleen, and then they'll actually feed on the small little microorganisms within them and then spit. Not slurp, but they spit it all back out. So you have things like fish that do this, you have things like mollusks that do this, and you, of course, have baleen whales. Even though they're not closely related, they all use very similar method of consumption, and I think this is cause for an example of, let's use a biology buzzword, convergent evolution. What is convergent evolution, Clara?
An organism, they're not like, they don't share that common ancestor, but they have that same common trait, and it's because they have like a similar niche.
True. So I think the textbook example of convergent evolution that you'll hear in maybe your intro bio course is a bat and a bird. So bats and birds are obviously, one is a mammal, one is a bird. they don't share a very close common ancestor, but they both have similar wing structures. But it's just because they use them for similar reasons, not because they diverged after that trait was evolved, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they didn't diverge from a common ancestor.
Yeah, they didn't diverge from a common ancestor that, like, both had wings.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about North Atlantic right whales due to their status as endangered under the Endangered Species Act since 1970, with fewer than 70 reproductive females left today. While their current hazards differ from those in the past, there's a very specific reason for their low population size. This is the whaling industry. And this brings me to my inspiration for this episode. In my conservation biology class, which I had taken in a prior term, we had to give presentations on a pre-assigned topic. Mine was desertification. Another girl had over-harvesting, and she had given a presentation that was so flagrantly misinformed that afterwards the professor even stopped and corrected her. To give credit where credit is due, she was not a biology student or an environmental science major, and I don't think the message that she conveyed was her intention. However, I think it goes to show that this is not common knowledge for people outside of the field, and it is one of our goals with this podcast to dispel myths that are easy to fall for. This peer of mine gave three examples of overharvesting: the Asian shark fin soup industry, which we've talked about before, the bushmeat harvest in many African countries. This is also a topic we've talked about in our last Black History Month episode. I recommend giving it a listen. Actually, referring to it as bushmeat in itself is part of the problem. And Inuit whaling. Let me just be very clear. While the Inuit do participate in whaling, they did not over-harvest the whale population to where it is today. It was the European whale hunt throughout the 1800s that decimated our populations as they are today. In modern day, the North Atlantic right whale is most threatened by boat collisions, changes in distribution and availability of prey due to climate change, entanglements, and noise pollution. In 2023, only 12 calves were born, and a big issue for scientists is being unable to tell how many of them die even when the deaths are reported, with 123 documented unusual mortality events. If you look into Atlantic right whales, you're going to see this unusual mortality event term come up a lot. It has been hypothesized that calving intervals have increased from 3 to 5 years to 6 to 10 years due to difficulty finding enough food to sustain a pregnancy. And even when these females are able to calf, they find themselves in very poor body condition, often resulting in low growth rates in calves. And this is kind of an interesting topic that I've only really learned about recently, and that is that maturity rate can depend on the resources available. I feel like this is a somewhat obvious example that if resources aren't necessarily abundant, that maturity rate is going to be delayed. But in our episode where we talked about the cocaine hippos, that hippos had been introduced to Colombia and it was just such a lush and rich environment for them that their maturity rate had actually like sped up incredibly. Mm-hmm. So that's been an interesting new fact that I've been learning recently. Another factor contributing to their threatened status is there's a very disproportionate amount of males to females. There's a very high number of males, a very low number of females, where when you want to sustain a species, it's not really all that great. One male right whale could get technically an infinite number of females pregnant in a given year, but a female can only produce one calf in a given year. So you want more of those females than you have males. The North Atlantic right whale is considered functionally extinct, another new term perhaps for some listeners. This means that the organism occurs in such low numbers that they do not have a meaningful effect on their environment. This has led some arguments, although I will say they're pretty seldom. I think that this is a pretty charming animal that a lot of people think is worth the effort to sustain. But I've heard some comments in discussions, maybe some devil's advocate players saying, well, what is really the point if they've been having no meaningful effect on their environment for so long? But because they're such a charming bigger animal, I don't think that's really ever going to be substantiated. I don't think they're going to lose that funding just because they're functionally extinct.
No. And the thing is, like, as humans, we want to try to preserve those charismatic animals. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I've been finding anyways. Organisms that are less charismatic, like, say, a frog or, like, some type of insect is going to be harder to preserve if they're functionally extinct.
Oh, especially if they're functionally extinct.
Compared to the right whale, the North Atlantic right whale, where they're a huge organism, they're a mammal, we're more closely related to them. We mm-hmm. feel some sort of connection to whales that we don't tend to feel towards, like, reptiles and stuff like this. And I think we've talked about that concept in other episodes.
Yes, for sure.
But I think that there's definitely a point in saving organisms just mm-hmm. as they are. I mean, we've talked about it before, like the intrinsic value of an organism mm-hmm. and preserving that for future generations is probably the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. So what is being done? The North Atlantic right whale is being extensively tracked and monitored through both aerial surveys and physical tracking monitors. This brought about a bit of a debate recently that I would really like your thoughts on, Clara. In October of last year, it was found that whale 5046 was injured due to a partially dislodged limpet tag with a minor lesion at the impact area. Limpet stands for low impact, minimally percutaneous electric transmitter, often used for cetacean tracking. Cetacean just refers to the order including all whales and porpoises. It has two barbs or sometimes suction cups and is fired from a crossbow or rifle. This is neither considered a low nor high invasive device. It sort of sits in the middle. And the consensus on this seems to be a bit of a Canadian versus American drama, with Canadian organizations such as DFO claiming that their veterinarians have looked at the lesion and said it is not cause for concern, whereas NOAA Fisheries, which is a US group, said that they were irresponsible for not properly dispatching the tag or checking if the whale was in good enough health. And I'm interested in this topic because I think it's like they're trying to get as much knowledge as we can, and we know that a lot of these whales are in bad body condition due to low prey availability. Is it worth potentially impacting their health negatively to learn more about them so that we can help preserve them?
I think this is an argument that we talked about in Arctic environments and whether or not government should be kind of trusted, and there's communities up north who believe government should not be trusted with tagging like large organisms like that, especially when they're endangered and there's cause for concern that any injury at all could cause significant negative impacts on that population or on that individual. And especially when we're monitoring things at the individual level, like we would be with the North Atlantic right whale, I think you have to consider the fact that with one organism dead, that's a lot of genetic diversity in a population that's getting removed, right?
Exactly.
So tracking a species, while yes, it's important,
if the certain precautions aren't taken and it's not done perfectly right 100% of the time, I don't think it should be done.
I completely agree with you. Honestly, from what I've looked at, it does seem like NOAA, which is a U.S.-based group, has been doing a lot more. And maybe that's just access to more funding. And I kind of agree with them in this situation as well. And you brought up a really interesting point, which we're going to move on to now. When you get to an animal like a North Atlantic right whale that is as threatened as it is, conservation is managed at an individual level, not a population level. Population refers to a group of individuals of the same species in the same area that can interbreed. So, if you were looking to study a population of unendangered fish in a river, and you wanted to put some kind of net to catch and gather information, if there were a reasonable measure of mortality, that would be fine. It would be expected and accounted for in the permit process, and in the science world would be considered a reasonable risk for the valuable information you would get from the study. However, when you get to animals that are protected on an individual level, like the North Atlantic right whale, no amount of mortality will be tolerated. And I believe harm also goes under that same umbrella. Moving on. One of the ways that scientists can tell these individual whales apart is due to these knobby white patches of rough skin called callosites, or callosites. They are white due to an organism that lives on them called cyamids? Cyamids? Or whale lice.
Uh-oh.
I don't think they cause, like, particular harm to them at all. I think they're pretty thick-skinned.
Okay.
And their pattern of callosites, or callosites, are as unique as fingerprints and are a tool used to identify them. I thought it was kind of cool. I had looked through a bunch of... Because a lot of them are measured by, like, those four-digit numbers, like I had mentioned before, but some of them have, like, nicknames. I remember seeing one, it was, like, a lot of the nicknames are based on these, like, whale lice patterns that they have. Like, one of them was... Her name was, like, Marilyn Monroe or something, because she had, I guess, something that maybe looked like her mole that she has. I thought that was kind of cute. So we know how they're gathering information. What's actually being done with this information? Well, vessel slow zones have been implemented when whales are around, and alternative routes have been recommended according to NOAA. To me, this feels like a very difficult-to-manage regulation, or they just aren't really regulations at all, and sometimes are just recommendations. There have also been some new technologies of lineless lobster traps and other ways to lower entanglement, but this is largely without the support of many fishers. In 2021, an action plan was released by Canada with 54 goals, with some high-priority examples including maintaining sightings databases and ensuring upholding of SARA-protected areas, and removing abandoned fishing gear. There is a story that has come up recently in the news that I think encapsulates the quality at which this situation is being dealt with, at least in Canada. A right whale was spotted recently in the shallow waters of the New Brunswick-Acadian Peninsula, used by lobster fishermen recently. DFO said that the whale was above the certain depth threshold that they have in place and ordered lobster fishermen to take up their traps for 15 days. This is very substantial because the lobster season only lasts 2 months, so this is millions of dollars lost here.
Mm-hmm.
The fishermen refused, citing that their maps were inaccurate and the whale was not actually above this threshold yet. The fishermen were right, and DFO removed the ban. Due to DFO's negligence, the wedge between industry and environmentalism was pushed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that governments need to be held to a higher standard and not just govern, but govern effectively. If industry and environmentalists can work together to protect the land we use, then I believe we can both come out with our goals met, because there's no fisheries without ocean health in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this story just encapsulates how, you know, there's so much, like, fight back between, you know, industry and environment when oftentimes government negligence can be to blame. Moving on. In 2024's calving season, there have been 19 documented calves, born with 14 surviving as of May 25th. There's frankly lots of sad stories I could give. However, I think I'll highlight some somewhat good news. I learned about a neat whale in my research named Dog Ear, or whale number 3590. She was named Dog Ear based on a description a scientist made of an injury that she had on her tail, causing the tip of one side to fold over like a dog ear. Dog ear had survived at least 3 vessel strikes by the age of 4 and is now 19 and has welcomed her first calf this year, who is, as of now, alive and well. This brings me to what I am just bringing up to Clara now, what I would like to do as a new segment semi-regularly on the show. Cetaceans are my favorite creatures, with right whales particularly grabbing my heart. And I was thinking, every now and again, maybe after trivia, I could, if I find some new and interesting updates or news surrounding white whales, or maybe even Dog Ear herself, I can give a right whale update. Maybe we can call it Right Whale Watch.
I love it.
Let's move on to our favorite segment,
trivia.
All right, Clara. How much does the right whale weigh?
Okay.
A, up to 80,000 pounds. B, up to 120,000 pounds. C, up to 140,000 pounds. Or D, up to 500,000 pounds.
C
is correct, up to 140,000 pounds. What is the lifespan of the right whale? Up to 40 years, up to 70 years, up to 90 years, or up to 120 years?
70.
70 is correct again, oh. Clara. She's killing the game.
I'm on fire today.
How big are right whales at birth? How long, I guess, might be the better word. 2 feet? 8 feet? 12 feet? Or 20 feet?
8 feet.
8 feet is correct!
Oh my gosh! These are just, like, guessings. I don't even know this stuff. I'm so proud.
Okay, this last one, I'm not entirely sure. This doesn't even feel right. I must have gotten this from somewhere half reputable, but it's just ABC. How did right whales get their names? A, because you would fasten them to the right side of the ship when killed. B, because their right side was extra tasty. Or C, because they were the right whale to hunt.
What the heck? I'll go with A. Please don't tell me it's like C or something.
It's C.
No!
Because they were the right whale to hunt. So uncreative.
Is this just like a joke or something?
I don't know. I forget. Okay. Listener, I'm sure if you're one of our 2 regular listeners of this show.
At Maria. We got 3. At Maria, Zui, and Lucas.
If you're Maria, Zui, or Lucas, you've probably noticed that we haven't uploaded in a little while. So I wrote most of this episode a month or two ago, or 3 ago. Sorry. So I'm not entirely sure where I got that information. All of my references are in the description. So feel free to look through them if you'd like.
And if you
it's
if
somewhere
you,
in there.
If you actually know the real answer, you can also like send us a DM on Instagram. What's our Instagram handle again?
I don't know. At Write Up Your Algae Podcast.
Or send us an email at ruyapodcast@outlook.com. And we'll probably respond.
We don't get many emails on there.
Or DMs.
Or DMs.
Or literally anything.
Or literally anything.
Not us being MIA for months on end.
If you send us an email with like a question, comment, episode suggestion, we 100% will include it in an episode.
And we'll give you a large
like,
shout
no
out.
No large shout out. To the Mi'kmaq people, the right whale is thought to be the master of life in the sea and is a friend of the creator Glooskap. I hope I never have to live in a world without them. Thank you for listening, and we hope this episode was
Right Up Your Algae.